Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evenings, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go! Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We're on with Grant Bentley, naturopath from Australia, on our weekly series, Monday evenings, talking about homeopathy and facial analysis. It is a special method that Grant has been involved with for probably either 10 or 20 years. You'll have to define how long. And we are open to suggestions, open to questions, comments. Get on the live chat, share with your friends. Get this message to go all the way around the globe, all the way from Australia to America. It's reached here, so it can reach anywhere. And we're looking forward to today's talk on energy and homeopathy. So I will just let you get started. And anytime anybody wants to chime in, just give us a buzz on the chat or call in. And the question is,
Okay,
we have sound. Good.
Okay, well, that's a good start at least. Anyway, yeah, look, I thought that today what I'd do is talk a little bit about homeopathy and energy. And I know that that sort of sounds like it should be, well, just a topic that everyone just accepts, that every homeopath understands that homeopathy is energy, because that's all that is in our remedies. So we accept that we are dealing with energy all the time. But what I find, I guess, interesting about the topic is that while everybody understands homeopathy is energy in regards to our remedies, I find that often the different practices of homeopathy are, well, they don't take into account the fact that homeopathy is energy in the sense of understanding how energy works as a complete model. So, yes, it's true that we will we will explain that there's no the original substance in the remedy at all. It's just the energy or imprint of the original substance that remains in our drops. But understanding homeopathy as energy is a lot more than that. I mean, if we understand that homeopathy is energy, it alters the whole practice of homeopathy rather than just sort of saying that the energy is the tools that the workman uses. It's really, it should permeate into understanding how we use the tools and what objective we are trying to achieve in the first place. And I think that this is probably where the development of HFA really comes from. It was not so much the idea that, you know, look, it just didn't dawn on me that homeopathy is energy, so therefore I better adjust my practice. It was a process that slowly and eventually developed to where it is now. But it's only that I can say things like we don't apply the energetic model into practice is because I was a fairly classical homeopath for a number of years. The HFA model has been going on for about 10 years. My practice has been going for about 20. So for half of that, I've been practicing a fairly traditional sort of practice, and for the other half, quite a different sort of practice. And that's how I know the two. So I guess what I wanted to kind of just introduce a little bit today was the idea of energy or homeopathy as energy from moving beyond beyond the containment of just energy inside our remedies to really understanding how energy is affecting the lives of our patients, the diseases that they're suffering from, and really, too, how it should permeate into how we take a case, and also, quite specifically, the posology, that is, the remedies and the case management of our remedies in a particular case. I have I've tried to point out that there are a number of different ways that the human body can become diseased. I mean, the most common ways, of course, is can be divided into two different sections, and I'm taking trauma out of this, car accidents and so on. But the way that we can become diseased is generally by an infectious model and a non-infectious model. The infectious model of disease is one that's fairly understandable, and it's the one that I guess most medicine works too, and there's a real reason for it too, and you can divide the infectious model of disease into both acute and chronic, and that's what Hahnemann did. So what we have is that you have acute infections, which are, you know, kind of still around today in this form of scarlet fever and measles, and the common cold or influenza is the most common one that we experience, but it's picking up an external life force that enters into our internal economy and starts utilizing our energy and our resources and for its own ends. And, of course, we don't want that, and as a result, we feel sick. But there are also two chronic infectious diseases that we know, like AIDS is one and malaria is another, even though I understand that malaria is a parasite. But we're still looking at a foreign external invader of a chronic nature entering into our system. Now, of course, Hahnemann saw quite a few chronic diseases, and three of them he called the chronic miasm. So what we have is that most of the germs that are flying around, either virus, bacterial, parasitical, or so on, are generally short-term. Our bodies can overcome them and throw them out, and if not, we will die from them. But then there are others that are more chronic by nature, meaning that the body's just going to have to come to terms with the fact that it is going to be depleted. We can't seem to kick this foreign invader out of our system. We are going to have to share this kind of really limited and confined space, but that doesn't mean that we'll ever agree with it and we ever like it and we're ever going to reach some sort of happy contentment. We're going to struggle against it for the rest of our lives.
Grant.
So
jumping into your stream of thought and speech here, I wanted to clarify in my own mind when you were saying acute disease that is a imposition on our energy field, whether it is an invader from outside, a parasite, a fungus, or something like that, or something from within that goes wrong or out of whack. And comparing these acute to chronic illness, I'm just trying to ask you to define for me a little bit. You mentioned malaria. Where does that fall? Like you said, it was coming from the parasite that is injected from the mosquito into the bloodstream. And is this something that you consider the body overcomes it and then gets healthy again, or it's a chronic disease that can keep coming back?
Well, it's a chronic disease in the sense that many of the people that have it will have it for an extended period of time. And I guess that's what we're meaning here by chronic. It's not a week's prodromal period, then another week to 10 days of crisis, and then we can begin to see that the patient is beginning to recover. So that is more your acute disease there, and that's where your scarlet fevers or your chickenpox or whatever it is may be coming in. But when you're dealing with when you're dealing with malaria, it's a repeated thing. And often every time the patient gets run down, they will get other bouts of this. And, of course, Hahnemann saw exactly the same thing happening with the syphilis and also too gonorrhea. And then later on when the 1900s came in, we saw a huge epidemic of a chronic disease in tuberculosis. Some would suggest that the chronic disease of the time is cancer now, but cancer doesn't really have a microbial origin as such. But if you take, say, something like tuberculosis, well, then your body, or leprosy, your body seems unable to be able to absolutely overcome it. And even the remedies don't seem to fully be able to, in a lot of cases, eject this from the body. But that's only theoretically, because theoretically they should. If you can eject scarlet fever from the body, then you should be able to eject syphilis from the body. And, of course, Hahnemann claimed that he could, and so too did a number of other practitioners as well.
I have 2 points on that. If I may. One, you mentioned chickenpox. So I think of it as the herpes virus that can have outbreaks later in life in shingles or other kinds of diseases of the immune system, so that it is always with us. Even though I did have chickenpox as a child, I feel that I am immune to getting it again, but it's still dormant within my body. And then many people have many hypotheses and theories about cancer, that perhaps it's from a fungus or some other thing that attacks the body and makes the cells different, undifferentiated anymore. And there are techniques that people are using to try and use this theoretical background to heal the person from cancer. So I think that there are a lot of theories out there, and I'm listening closely to what it is that you're saying Hahnemann taught us regarding, I'm in my own mind not able to differentiate so fully acute and chronic, because I think that they're so much linked together.
Okay, well, hopefully what this will do is this will clarify some of it. So the first thing that we need to do is that we need to understand that the chronic is long-term. My asthma is long-term, arthritis is long-term, and cancer is long-term. So they're not the week's worth of prodromal period and then the crisis and then you get over it. So 2 or 3 weeks is really what you expect with chickenpox or measles or whatever it may be from pretty much start to finish. But when you're dealing with a chronic illness, then you're looking at years. This is just something that somebody has. But when you're dividing chronic disease, it's very important to understand, and this is kind of getting into the topic of the day, it's very important to understand what is an infectious chronic disease and what isn't an infectious chronic disease, because the way that you treat both is entirely different. In the same way, someone can come into my office with chickenpox, for example, and I am just going to pretty much think of antimonium triparicum 30 in repeated doses until the crisis is over, unless there are very strong indications for another remedy. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that these sort of infections are very predictable in their course and in their sequence of symptoms. And this is why homeopaths could come up with genus epidemicus remedies and ward off the massive impact that a lot of this stuff can make. A good example of this, it would be Bonninghausen's writings in his lesser writings, talks about how one of the villages of which he was living nearby, there was a particularly nasty smallpox outbreak that was going around the country, or at least around the district. He happened to go into this town giving people doses of Fuya, which he thought was a specific against smallpox, And which is why, of course, then Suya ended up becoming the remedy historically for the anti-vaccination, because the only vaccination that was around at the time was for smallpox. And so smallpox became the great anti-vaccinal remedy, or the remedy for vaccinosis. But, of course, there was only really one vaccination at the time. So whether or not Fuya is still the remedy that is going to be the be-all and do-all in that particular, in the sequel of vaccination is really, I think, a big question mark, but that's a completely different topic, but certainly of historical interest. But where it becomes important for today's topic is that what we see from Bonnyhausen's writing is that in one case he says not only, even though this was a particularly severe outbreak of smallpox, and I got to the town in time and I managed to distribute the remedies, not only did the people that were under his care, no single sufferer ever died of smallpox under his care, but some, many of them were left with no markings whatsoever. And he's saying this is, this is highly unusual. It's like having the flu going around your city or your town, giving people a dose and suddenly there's not one sneeze. I mean, it's that remarkable. And so what we see there is that our similimum remedies cannot, they're repellent action, because remember, this is where it becomes important to understand. Our remedies might be energy, but there's certainly something in it. Now, you see this a lot of times where people will explain homeopathic remedies and they'll say it's just the imprint of the remedy. There's nothing actually in it. And I can be, I have to wrap myself over the knuckles because I say that a lot myself. But that's not the real answer. The real answer is there definitely is a something in it, because energy is a something. And what we see that's in it, when we apply it properly, is like the two ends of the magnets coming together. One force, one similimum will repel another. So not only do we see in our remedies that if I was to give Aunt Tart, I would expect that the smallpox, the herpes virus, would be successfully repelled from the body. But we can also use it in a prophylactic sense, repelling it before it's even inside the body. That is the whole thing of homeopathic prophylaxis, or the genus epidemicus remedies, getting to it before it actually gets inside. It's almost a repellent force field that it creates, because we are already saturated with this remedy. And so, as we know by the laws of nature, that opposites may attract, but similars repel. So the more that we are saturated with the similar, then the more that we will repel the invader and remain unaffected. Now, the same theoretically is true, whether or not you're talking about syphilis, tuberculosis. Look, I won't mention the cancer again. I understand what you're saying, that there are a lot of people that link cancer to particular viruses, flukes, all sorts of things. But they are theories. And the simple fact of the matter is that, look, I'd be very surprised if there was one universal cause for cancer. In fact, at this stage, I would be, kind of drop down on the floor surprised, because it's just so multifactorial that I'm not suggesting that a fluke or a virus couldn't be a contributing factor. But the multifactorial nature of cancer, in my mind, might sort of look, there's clearly super infections that occur, which you can see, like Kaposi's sarcoma in AIDS and so on. So there are definitely going to be some parasitical and opportunistic infections that begin once you're in a very weakened state. But whether or not these viruses or flukes are a cause, I think, look, I think they're a casual link rather than a causal link. There's not enough evidence to suggest that there's anything like that. Medicine would love it, of course, if it was, because in the very thing that Hahnemann is doing, even though we think that we're so totally antagonistic towards medicine, which we are in some ways, I guess, but we're not in others, because what Hahnemann was trying to achieve was he was very Pasteurian by nature. What he's trying to say is that if he can come up with specific remedies to be able to be the simulamen for a disease, then we should, in fact, not only have a very accurate and quick treatment plan, but we also have an accurate and quick protection plan. Now, of course, the one disease equals the one remedy is the basis of Pasteurian medicine. That's what orthodox medicine is trying to achieve. In fact, you could argue, really, that homeopathy, at least originally, was doing it a lot better. But the non-infectious chronic disease is something that I think Hahnemann kind of missed. And we know that he missed this because he lumped all diseases, absolutely every single disease, into having a chronic disease origin, a microbial origin. And not only did he do that, he narrowed those or every disease down into one of the three categories of flora, syphilis, and psychosis. Now, syphilis, for example, in medical history is known as the great imitator, meaning that you become so immunocompromised, like what you see with AIDS patients, or you become so immunocompromised that you can exhibit any number, and in fact every number, of diseases known to humankind. And so as a result of that, anything could end up a display of AIDS or end up a display of syphilis, just simply because the patient is so immunocompromised. And so it became known as the great imitator, meaning that if you've got syphilis, you can manifest it in so many ways, from the light, just skin rash, down into the suicidal depression and everything in between, and all of it is belonging to syphilis. So what Hahnemann did historically is that he said that if syphilis can create these symptoms, then all of these symptoms must have syphilis as their origin. But the fact is that you can't always make those sort of links. I talked about this in the course one time, and I think it's an Aristotelian type of logic, and there is a name, and, you know, for the life of me, year after year I forget the name, so why I bring it up, I don't know, but there is an actual name for it, and it means it's something like this. If you are going to say that the Irish like potatoes, that is a true statement. But to then reverse it and say all Irish or only Irish like potatoes is not an accurate statement. You can't, it doesn't follow, it doesn't go backwards. It might be accurate in its original forward momentum, but when you reverse the momentum, it's not as accurate. And so that's what Hahnemann did, though, is that he said that syphilis can create all this array of different signs, symptoms, and diseases, which is absolutely true. But what he then went on to say is that anybody that displays any of these things, like a copper-coloured eruption, or drinks too much, or has depression, must have started with syphilis. And you know that's not true. That's the reverse logic.
Right. Yeah, so these are particular logical, you know, people who study statistics, they have equations of balance. If A plus B equals C, then, you know, back and forth. And I didn't really do very well in that course in college either. But so that's the one that you're trying to say, that he was using that type of logic to say if everyone had the symptoms of syphilis, and then everyone had a similar origin of all of these diseases? Am I getting that clearly?
That's exactly what he is saying. If you read chronic diseases, he's saying that, look, if SORA creates, if SORA creates irritation of the airways and profuse mucus and so on and so forth, then anybody that has a cold has to have been soric. Now, you can see the logic in it, but you know that the logic kind of fails because historically it doesn't work out. Now, clearly, for those people who were displaying syphilitic symptoms, who actually did have syphilis as its origin, Hahnemann must have seen enough success to know that he was really onto something. And we know that he's looking for the specifics, because in chronic diseases itself, he talks about Thuja as being the specific for psychosis and mercury being the specific. One disease, one remedy. That's what he's looking for. Chickenpox, ant's heart, scarlet fever, belladonna. Until signs and symptoms tell you otherwise. So in exactly the same format that acute disease can be repelled by the body and all of the signs and symptoms that disease creates once it's in, like scarlet fever, which are predictable, if we can kick that disease out of the body energetically, then all the signs and symptoms should go with it. That's the basis of how homeopathy works. So the theory that Hahnemann came up with was, well, if you can do that for acute diseases, then you should be able to do it for chronic diseases. Now, clearly, he saw with people whose signs and symptoms definitely did have a chronic microbial origin, like syphilis, that he must have had enough success to validate what it was that he was saying, because he eurekas and here you are and you get a much more perfect cure and so on and so forth, permanently eradicated from the body to, you know, extinguished, annihilated, all of the adjectives Hahnemann uses, never to return.
Didn't he provide more than one remedy? Weren't there
He did definitely provide more than one remedy, but the specific is still the same. Okay, so what he's trying to do here is that, look, if the belladonna doesn't work for scarlet fever and you notice that rather than the head being hot and the feet being cooler, if the feet are hotter than the head, then it's probably going to be sulfur. So what we're seeing is that in 80% of the, we're kind of going back to the 80-20 rule. In 80% of the cases, the belladonna is going to be fine. But in the 20% of the cases where belladonna isn't fine, you're going to need another 80 remedies, because it could be any one of them. So this is why you need all of these different remedies, and you still do need to individualize. But the simple fact of the matter is that the infections themselves generally create such a specific set of signs and symptoms that we can, in fact, apply generally a specific remedy for them, a little like arnica and bruising. The inflammatory response is the same throughout the entire body. So when we bruise ourselves, because arnica fits the inflammatory response or the bruising response so completely, it doesn't matter what miasm you belong to and it doesn't matter anything else. If you give arnica at that particular time, most of the time, 80% of the time, arnica will be able to help you. But if every now and again the arnica won't help, and that's when you need to individualize. So you end up with a whole number of different remedies that are anti-soric, anti-syphilitic, anti-psychotic, according to Hahnemann, because not everyone does. The reason that they ended up with so many lists of remedies is because, now I'm going to get back to this logic because I know we're running out of time, but it's because the clinic shows us that it isn't just infection. the chronic disease, if we understand the energetic model, the chronic disease also comes from continued chronic stress or chronic exhaustion, meaning that our energy levels drop for long periods of time, and this river of energy that generally bathes all of our vital organs and joints and everything else becomes depleted, and as a result of that, there is ill health in those organs, joints, or whatever, and which are displayed as signs and symptoms. The permanent restoration of health, where the invading disease that is causing all the problems is finally and permanently eradicated from the body, means that if we give the right remedies, then that patient should be disease and symptom free. What I'm saying to you is that the common experience of chronic disease is that there is often a lead up to it, meaning that there could be a divorce, there could be overwork for a number of years, there can be a whole range of things before the person finally collapses. It's kind of the spirit's willing, but the flesh, it's getting weaker. And as a result of that, it's exhibiting signs and symptoms. So we come along, we give our remedies, the patient improves dramatically, thanks us profusely, but the next time that there is an energetic drain, like another death in the family, a breakup or whatever, lose their business, then the same old signs and symptoms begin to return. Now, how is that possible? This was the question for me. How is that possible when theoretically I have removed that disease layer for a permanent restoration of health and cure? So either one of two things could have been my answer. The first is that the remedy that I was giving was incorrect despite the fact that my patient was happy and symptom-free for sometimes months at a time, even though they were racked with pain beforehand. Now, that seems a little inconceivable that the wrong remedy can do such right, have such right outcomes. The second conclusion, and this is the one that I ended up accepting, is that I am not pushing an actual disease like syphilis or tuberculosis out of the body. And this is why it's returning. What I notice is that when the patient gets run down, their energy is down, signs and symptoms are up. When the remedy goes in, which is an energy medicine, brings energy back up, signs and symptoms drop down. So my conclusion to all of this is that there are two types of chronic disease. Even though Hahnemann didn't say there were two, my conclusion is that there are two. One is that there are infectious chronic diseases, like what Hahnemann was talking about. So I'm not saying Hahnemann's wrong. I'm just saying it's an incomplete model. There is infectious chronic disease, syphilis, tuberculosis, and so on. But there are non-infectious chronic diseases. And this non-infectious chronic disease is where what is, to understand the non-infectious chronic disease, we need to move into the energetic model of what homeopathy is all about and see it for what it is. That these signs and symptoms that are being diagnosed as a chronic disease are not a chronic disease at all, but are the legacy or outcome from long-term chronic stress or chronic exhaustion. So meaning that our remedies are balancing this situation out and bringing the patient back into balance. So when I look at it through that type of model, I am not looking at any permanent restoration to cure. I am looking at this patient as a management issue, not a one-off, kicked out of the body, never to return. I know full well, and I will say this to patients, you have to be careful not to overdo it. if you go through times where there is a lot of cataclysmic events that are occurring, very draining events, then you are going to notice these same signs and symptoms will begin to return. So this is when you need to see me again. The other thing that becomes really important with the energetic model is when you get it right, drained bodies start feeling really good. But what I'm doing is that I'm giving them an ounce of energy and they're doing a pound's worth of activity with it. And so in the end, I'm fighting against it. So I really have to, once you begin to understand the model, there comes a whole kind of set of teaching instructions of how this person has to aid themselves to get better as well. They have to be patient. Once their energy is building up and they're getting reserves and energetic credit back in the bank, then and only then can they begin to take on life with a whole heap of gusto and vigor. But if they're attacking life with more energy than is coming in, then there's going to be a net deficit. So
it makes sense. That's another
next week.
That sounds like another equation for us, a mathematical equation of energy going in and coming out. And it sounds very much like we as human beings are dynamic with our environment, with other people. And depending on how much energy we expend, depends on how much we have left for ourselves to keep our systems running fine-tunely. So I know I deplete my energy a lot. this is very, very interesting. I learned a lot today about acute and chronic disease. And I'll let you do some closing lines, and then you can get back to what you're doing, and I will close the show with all of the regular news.
Okay, well, look, what I think is, what about if we hold that note, and we'll go into a little bit about non-infectious or energetic chronic diseases and the different ways that homeopaths approach disease, because there's an anomaly there. There's something that's just not working. We're not applying a real energetic blueprint to an energetic problem. And this is, I think, partly why homeopaths are scratching their head and finding the system just so darn difficult. But like what you said, you know, look, it's kind of like the old Vedas. You know, you're allotted a certain amount of heartbeats. But if you're going to use all that up in fear and worry and just scattered energy, then when that person comes into you saying that they've got circulatory problems, now you know why. You do have a certain amount of energy, and that amount of energy is kind of allotted to you. When we keep it going with food and we keep it going with sleep, but if we use more than we have, then what we're going to do is borrow on tomorrow's. Now, when tomorrow becomes today, that person turns into a patient. And we've got to be able to understand this. And we have to make it clear that while you're on the remedy, you cannot be spending a pound's worth of energy for an ounce worth of remedy. It just won't work.
Can I also ask sometime in the future and in future show, for children or infants who come into this world and they have depleted energy to begin with? I mean, you know, children who come into this world who have disease, and they didn't deplete any energy to begin with. They were born and with this deficiency. And to me, that's a question in my mind about that. I don't know if that's a topic you would be interested in talking about.
Look, I am very interested in that topic, but I think you're starting to stretch my the degree of which I can answer that. I mean, this is, now you're starting to get karmic, aren't you? I mean, I believe it. I'm a really big believer that sometimes what happens is that we come into this world equipped already for the stresses that we are going to face. But, you know, and sometimes that can throw us into a state of fear. But then, you know, every time I think, well, look, that's the theory, two parents come in that seem pretty chilled out and loving, and they've just got a really wound up kid. And so I kind of tear up my notes and start again.
Yeah, I didn't expect you to answer it. I thought that,
I'm good.
You know,
I'm glad, because I can't.
No, I thought, well, you know, to me it just popped into my mind as a question that I had. I know it's very theological maybe and spiritual maybe, but I didn't know whether you had any thoughts on that and whether it was worthwhile in a future show to talk about it. But if it's stretching the limits of where we are going here, then that's fine as well. And I just planted an idea for people to think about. So,
well, I'm certainly open to the questions of it, as long as people are a little patient and understand that, look, if I end up saying I don't know, that's about the best I can do.
Okay. Well, so what did you say we were going to do for the next time?
Well, look, what we'll do next time is that we'll continue this discussion on understanding homeopathy through as an energetic model.
Okay, that sounds very good. And so I just wanted to leave and let folks know that we appreciate when they come in and listen, when they get on the live chat and leave some questions or comments so that we have more material to cover and answer your questions specifically on the air. And we also want to let you know that you can go to Grant's website, vcch.com. Is that correct? Oh, he probably, your website, I thought people might want to visit over there. Besides the Homeopathy World Community, we want to let folks know where they can go to find you.
www.vcchvictorcharliecharlieharry.org.
Right. And you can check there. There's a lot of podcasts and archived and tools and tutorials and all sorts of wonderful things for folks to research and review. There are classes that are coming up, and I'm sure that you will be fascinated. Please tell your friends. We really learn so much from the wealth and experience that Grant has to offer us, and I'm very, very appreciative that he's on the show with us. And so let's see, we have only, I have enough time to just finish up. If you want to leave, Grant, and I'll just tell the folks about the other upcoming shows, that's fine with me, because I know
that... Okay, well, we'll thank you for your time.
Okay, you have a good one. Bye-bye. For those folks who are still listening into the show today, we have on Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, USA, Dr. Adil Chimsalawala-Kasim, our cardiologist co-host, is going to be presenting continuation of the pregnancy and heart health, which has been very educational and informative. And he always has some wonderful cases to share with us and how he handles them. And on Thursday, we have at noon Alan Phillips. He will be talking about recent current events concerning vaccinations and what's going on in the medical world and how people are fighting against the mandatory vaccination and injection of whether it's children, adults, healthcare workers, employees, immigrants, males, females, boys, teens, all sorts of things are going on today in the world of vaccinations. And we talk with Alan about our rights and freedoms in the United States, and I'm sure it applies around the world. So please look for that and share those shows. We have following Alan on Thursday at 1 p.m. is Dr. Christina Chambreau, veterinary doctor who is going to be talking about obstacles to cure. We just had last two shows about military dogs and just regular pets who have been abused dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. And we're going to move on to obstacles to cure. Dr. Chambreau has been teaching us how we observe and care for our pets properly. And when we see a change, what does this mean and what actions do we take? Again, she does talk a lot about energetic remedies, about using Reiki and flower essences and all sorts of other tools besides just homeopathy. So she is also a wealth of knowledge for us to share and learn. Please have a great week. Wishing you all the best. And I'm so thankful that we have listeners to the show. And mark this show a favorite, put reminders on, and we will see you back again for Grant next Monday, unless we have a hold. If that is March, I may be traveling to visit my family and not able to have a show on that night, so we will see. And we're going to end the show tonight, and thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.